How did you decide that you wanted to do these books now?
Well, the information that was out there on both my mother and my grandmother was so inaccurate. And we kept having people, you know, we had already opened the gallery, and we kept having people come in and say, well, from what I understand from so-and-so, this is what happened to your mother, or this is what happened to your grandmother, or this is what they did, you know. And I just thought, why are people saying things that are not correct, you know? And the books that had been written on both my mother and my grandmother were not, they weren't well researched. And so there was just a whole bunch of things that were, you know, sort of wrong with the whole picture. Okay. And so I wanted something that was factually correct, that was well researched, interviewed. You know, I wanted the writers to go through the archives. I wanted them to understand fully who my mother and grandmother were as women and as Native women and as artists.
Mm-hmm. And they loved them too.
They did. And so they became best friends with them. And I had been wanting to write my own book since, 2001 or 2002, and actually for my 40th birthday bought myself a laptop, you know, with the intention of doing that. Well, three laptops later, here I am. And the reality is that, you know, my memoirs, these little stories, which are windows into my life with my mother and my grandmother and my grandparents and my grandfather and my, you know, my friends and so on and so forth, all of these things, they all create who we are as artists. They are, you know, they're the entire picture. And but there's so much funny stuff because, you know, the lives of artists are not always tragic and dramatic, you know. There's some really funny stuff, you know, and we're humans, and we live day-to-day lives, and, you know, our kids get into trouble, or we find ourselves in strange situations or something. But all of these things that happen in our day-to-day lives, that also goes into our paintings. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not obviously, but it affects our moods, and it affects our personalities, and it affects our relationship with our art. So that was important.
Okay. You have a lot of things to work through with your family and a lot mm-hmm. of things that you've gone through. You know, it's not just been a big bowl of cherries.
Right.
So does this mean that when you get to the point where you want to do the book and you want the books to be written, that you've come to grips, you've come to, you're at peace with everything?
No, I'm not at peace with anything. No, what it means is that I've gotten to a point where I'm ready to go through it, and I'm ready to come to terms with it, and that I have a clear understanding, or I'm willing to develop a clear understanding of what that situation was with my growing up as a teenager in my mother and stepfather's house, or that maybe I'm willing to look clearly now at, you know, how my real father lived his life and how he ended up being killed, or how, you know, my mother's death or my grandmother's death affected me as a woman. And you know, I'm strong. What it says is that I'm strong enough to deal with whatever these stories bring to the forefront for me.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, I hear there's already a second printing. So let's talk about how people can get the books.
Okay. People can get the books by going to the website www.threebooks.com. Or they can go to the Golden Dawn website, which is goldendawngallery.com, and let us know. We will not be selling these through bookstores. We will be selling them strictly through the gallery at first, and then hopefully we will be branching out.
Okay. When will the second printing be ready?
I think the bulk of the books will be coming in September, late September.
Oh,
so, No, it's actually really good. This has been had a huge, tremendous response, and a lot of people have been waiting for that. We've had two presentation dinners. The first presentation dinner, which was a couple of nights ago, we had people coming up to us thanking us for finally doing something like this, you know. And it's been three stories and one story waiting to be told, you know, and a lot of people have been waiting for it, you know. We're very happy with the results. Everybody did an incredible job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. About every 6 weeks, our home, meaning mamas and grandmas, went through transitions from semi-tidy to stuff everywhere. And it was just a normal art business cycle. Between the two of them, there was always a batch of 5 to 15 paintings going constantly, unless it was September. I always knew whose house I was supposed to go to after school based on who was getting ready for what show, and either one was fine for me. A normal week. My life was fairly routine up until Craddock came on the scene. Before then, the following is what regularly happened in my world until the end of third grade. I would walk home to Grandma's house and announce that I had arrived. She would then give me a kiss and tell me to find something to eat and let her paint until dinner. There would either be earth paintings or casein paintings stacked around at various stages of drawing. There were never both going at the same time. Grandma's earth pigments required her to grind the rocks into dirt, then prime and sand her panels with pumice, sketch her composition, mix her earth pigment, paint, and start painting, and painting and painting, and sanding and painting. Grinding her rocks was a filthy job, with dust flying all over the place, especially the black dust. It would be all over her clothes, on her face, and in her hair. Eventually, it would make its way to the telephone, light switches, and cigarettes. It was back-breaking work because she ground the rocks on a metate with a mono. Breaking of the rocks and the grinding of the back and forth was the only way she trusted would work. Someone gave her an electric grinder, but the motor quickly burned out. Before she got started painting, she would clean her house from floor to ceiling, knowing that once she got started, there was no stopping until her paintings were finished. When you walked into her house, a strong whiff of pine sol or ammonia would hit you right between the eyes. Or I could walk home to Mama's house, which might be longer or shorter from school, depending on where we lived and what year it was. She'd say, "Don't eat anything until dinner. You'll ruin your appetite. Go play." She would have a few paintings going at once as well, although she tended to get fixated on two or three rather than 5 or 10 like Grandma. Mama could work longer hours, making coffee in the percolator twice a day. I would wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she would have been up for a while. It was the same at Grandma's. Grandma wore pajamas and a thin house coat that snapped, but if the buttons fell off on her pajamas, she'd use safety pins. I could usually smell a cigarette burning when she was painting. She'd sit at the table in her studio, usually a kitchen table that was leveled flat, and be painting with her right hand and have a cigarette in her left. The TV would be on with Search for Tomorrow first thing in the morning. Both Mama and Grandma watched the same shows. Regardless of whose house I was at, they'd get up from painting to fix some breakfast and send me off to school. After I left for school, they would both sit back down to paint for Days of Our Lives and As the World Turns. If something awful happened on the soap opera, you can bet Mama or Grandma would be calling the other one to bitch about what an asshole Dr. Stewart was for messing around with his wife with that tramp. Or, Rachel Matthews doesn't deserve a man like Russell Matthews. Nothing got their blood boiling like those soaps years old. Framing. They always had lots of paintings that they were framing themselves. Mama would buy frames, bust them apart, and have them rejoined or would repaint them. She glued burlap, which she bought rolls of, to cardboard backing and then glued the finished painting to the burlap, all with rubber cement. That was always the night before she had to leave for whatever show she was headed to. Grandma would go to the lumber store and buy baseboard molding, come home and cut it by hand, not ever with an electric saw. with her miter box, which she called her cutting machine. Imagine grandma out in the backyard after a hard day of painting, Salem in her mouth, 7 and 7 on the table, cutting away. She was one of the hardest working people I've ever seen. She glued the frame sticks together in her vise and then nailed them as well. She sanded them lightly before putting her gesso-based gray paint on them. Using about 3 or 4 coats, once her frames were dry, she'd start putting the paintings in, and that was always the night before she had to leave. The look. Grandma would wash her hair about once a week and roll it up in metal rollers. Mom washed her hair about once a week when it was long, and if she had to go somewhere, she would use the instant spray shampoo to roll her oily hair up. The stress level was high with both of them, and words got sharp. Nothing could be packed in Grandma's station wagon until they had their clothes sewn, cleaned, and ironed. Sometimes they'd make their own dresses, mantas, or skirts. Other times, Auntie Miriam would make us all outfits or sew fiesta skirts for Mom and Grandma. They both preferred artistically handmade clothing for their shows instead of the store-bought things. No matter how successful or well-known that Grandma got, she never forgot where she came from. To Grandma, the most important thing was remembering who you were and where you came from and what had to be done. When Annie Leibovitz wanted to photograph Grandma for her upcoming women's book and told us when it would fit her schedule, Grandma said, "No, that doesn't work. I have to bake banana bread. Alberta gave me a whole bunch of bananas, and they'll go bad if I don't use them." Grandma was never photographed by Annie Leibovitz. When El Mama Day was getting a lot of press about an award he had just won, I read an article in the paper out loud to Grandma since they had known each other in the old days. I talked about El Mama Day this and El Mama Day that and what El Mama Day had won or said or did. Finally, Grandma looked over at me and said, "Well, I guess I'm the only great Indian without an ego."